This Persian power, which now by the end of the 6th century is right on the very edges of the Greek world, is an empire which by our standards we might call undergoverned. That is to say, there are no massive imperial bureaucracies. Rather, the Persians intelligently, in a stroke of genius in my opinion, recognised that the key to keeping their empire together was to allow a certain amount of local autonomy. Now, that local autonomy was not in the hands of the indigenous population. Rather, it was in the hands of the administrators given charge of these territories. These territories of the Persian Empire were known as satrapies. We would call them provinces. And they often corresponded to the original territory of the various pre-Persian kingdoms. So rather than laying a heavy hand on their conquered territories, the Persians tried to work with whatever style of government, whatever ethnic unit had existed beforehand. And in many cases, although a satrap, a Persian governor, would be in place, in some instances, even local rulers were allowed to retain their power as long as they answered to a Persian-appointed overlord. These satraps, or governors that I've referred to, enjoyed a great deal of independence. And one of the reasons that the Persian king could afford to let them do this was that nearly all of them were his friends and relatives. So we should think about this empire in slightly different terms from the way we sometimes approach modern empires. We're looking really at the same kingdoms and the same ethnic groups as have existed for hundreds of years in the ancient Near East, but now with a new ruling elite drawn from the Persian royal family and its various lines. Cyrus the Great died in 530 BC, and he was succeeded by his son Cambyses. But from the point of view of the Greeks, there was little during this period of the next 8 years, from 530 to 522, that brought them into further contact with the Persians, because Cambyses, for much of that time, was involved in putting down a rebellion in Egypt and reconquering it once again for the Persians. He is remembered primarily from stories in Herodotus as a man who went mad by the end of his life, who raced around destroying sacred animals of the Egyptians. But in fact, there's very little outside of these Greek sources to suggest that that's the truth about Cambyses. It's simply a lull, really, in the expansion of the Persians into the domain of the Greek world. But after the death of Cambyses, there is a significant change in the affairs of the Persians. And again, the treatment of this by our Greek sources is quite revealing. In 522, after the death of Cambyses, Darius came to the throne. He was not the son of Cambyses, but rather from a collateral line of the Achaemenids. And he came to the throne during a time when there was some dispute about who the actual successor would be. And after various negotiations and some conflict and murders within the royal household, Darius successfully established himself as the new king of the Persian Empire. What is particularly interesting, though, is to turn away from the actual details of Darius's coming to the throne and to look once again at the way the Greeks thought about this and what they had to say. Herodotus, in Book 3 of his histories, maintains that as the Persians were trying to determine who should succeed Cambyses, they held a constitutional debate. And in this constitutional debate, various of the Persian noblemen came forward and advocated changing the Persian system of government. One of these Persians maintained that the best system was in fact oligarchy, a system whereby only a narrow elite controls the kingdom. And then another came forward and said, no, in fact, democracy is better because that's the rule of the greatest number of people and that's the best system to have. And then, of course, finally, one comes forward and says, no, monarchy is really the best way to go, and that's the view that triumphs, and so the Persians remain a monarchy. Now, if there are warning bells going in your head as you hear my recounting of Herodotus, then you're right, because as one very good French scholar has said, in this instance, the Persians are speaking Greek. And I don't just mean that Herodotus, of course, has to write in Greek, and so the speeches are recorded in Greek. The very conception that these people are playing with is a Greek conception about a choice of government, a monarchy, an oligarchy, or a democracy. These are the choices that the Greeks of the 5th century were facing. They are not the choices that the Persians of the 6th century were facing. So what we find here is that at this level, the Greeks are betraying that they actually knew very little about the Persians at all, if they seriously imagined that a group of Persian noblemen in the 520s could sit down and say, gee, you know, maybe democracy would be a better route for the Persians. This is a fantasy, a concoction of the 5th century Greeks.